Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. If you desire to speak to the host, please press 1 at any time, and the host will be notified that there is a caller in queue. Otherwise, please hold and you will be able to listen to the show.
Whose time has come for us to claim our birthright, each and every one? Evil hands have intervened, controlling from the shadows, think they can't be seen. But we have eyes, see in the dark, to cast a light upon the madness we embark. Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand of the truth, transparency. For we must be the masters of our destiny. Upon their face, sincerity, while underneath the self-agenda does proceed. But falsity perfumes the air. The sin screams louder than the finest ever there.
They'll fill your place
with GMOs, and soon your lineage will never cease to grow.
Inject your blood with toxic waste.
The world is all that fears if you'll just die in haste. Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency. For we must be the masters of our destiny. Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency. For we must be the masters of our destiny. For we must be the masters of our destiny. For we must be the masters of our destiny.
Welcome. You're listening to Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. with vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips, coming to you live from the Vaccine Rights Studios in beautiful Asheville, North Carolina. We are here every Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 Central, 4 Mountain, and 3 in the afternoon Pacific Time. Every Wednesday, the last Wednesday of each month, is hosted by my wonderful friend and former co-host of the show at our previous time on Thursday afternoons, Debbie Bruck, founder of Homeopathy World Community, coming to you the last Wednesday of the month at this time to talk to you about homeopathy and vaccines and or other medical issues, pertinent medical issues of the day. Definitely something to catch. Tons to talk about today as always, but I want to, excuse me, want to remind everybody, this is a live broadcast show, you can listen to it in the archives. The recordings, every show is recorded and archived, and you can listen to this and any other show we've had or done. But if you catch the live show, it's a live call-in show, and you can call in just to listen, or you can call in to ask a question about your rights concerning vaccines, or to offer a comment about the vaccine controversy. So invite people to call in. That call-in number, you can find it online at the top of freedomizerradio.com, freedom, I-Z-E-R, radio. So there's two R's together there, freedomizerradio.com. But if you're listening, that number is area code 347-324-3704. That number again, call-in number to listen or ask a question or make a comment, area code 347-324-3704. And I encourage folks to be brave and go ahead and call in. You don't have to tell us who you are, although we like to know first names, so we have something to call you while we're talking to you. But please do call in with those questions or comments. So I want to run through, hopefully, a quick list of some different vaccine news issues and things I've seen in my practice or questions that have come to my attention recently about vaccine rights issues. So here's one. I just couldn't pass this one up without passing it along. The medical publishing world, and I have to be careful here because I believe without any question that there are serious researchers conducting legitimate research who are following all the rules, doing the right thing, getting valuable, sometimes critically valuable information out there that doctors or educators or other concerned people can use to the advantage of themselves and or their patients or clients or students. But I tell you, I really just don't know the way to put it. The medical publishing world, unfortunately, and despite the undoubted presence of those who function and operate with integrity within that system, is nevertheless a joke. It's just become a joke. It is completely unreliable. And that's not just my personal opinion, but we've had information come to light recently or come to my attention recently. MIT students wrote a software program that would generate random medical studies, and literally hundreds of these studies have actually been published. And there was another fella who's did sort of a study, if you will, that got published in the journal Science, where he created a totally fabricated study, submitted it over 300 times to 300 different publications. Because in case you're not aware, there are literally tens of thousands of medical publications around the world. It is just an amazingly diverse arena. But this random, this fabricated study, false researcher names, false university names, and over half of more than 300 submissions for publication were accepted. And as far back now as 2008, and this would have been give or take 6 years ago, Dr. Marcia Angel from Harvard University, who formerly had been an editor for the New England Journal of Medicine for over 20 years, or for 20 years, you don't get much more inside and at the heart of the mainstream medical publishing industry than that. An editor for the New England Journal of Medicine. She went public in 2008, several years ago now, and said the medical literature and health authorities are no longer reliable. She's not saying, or at least I'm certainly not hearing, that she says every study is bad, but so many of them are bad that it's not just the occasional bad apple in the barrel, it's the maybe occasional good apple in a barrel. There's another gentleman, forgive me, I don't recall his name off the top of my head, but a medical doctor who has researched the issue thoroughly and spoken publicly about it, gone as far as to say the odds of the conclusions in any given study selected at random, the odds that those conclusions are correct are less than 50-50. It's more likely that any given study's conclusions are wrong than it is that they're correct. Now, part of this is attributable to the fact that science is continually evolving. And there's the old medical school joke they would tell incoming medical students beginning of their first year of medical school. Half of what we teach you over the next 4 years is going to be wrong. The problem is right now we don't know which half. And it's a joke, but there's an absolutely valid reality underlying that. And that is, in fact, there's a branch of science that is the study of science that tells us that the knowledge collectively in any given field has what they call a half-life, and very similar to when we talk about half-life of radioactive substances. The half-life of knowledge in any given field is the amount of time it takes for half of the quote-unquote facts in any given field of knowledge to become either disproven altogether or irrelevant, superseded by new additional information and facts. So scientists tend to treat current scientific consensus as permanent reality. This is the way the world works on this area, in this point, this issue, what have you. That's not how it works, folks. Now, I'm not calling for every scientist in the world and every news reporter reporting on science to go to the level of saying this is the consensus currently, which is subject to future change. But the reality is that every fact, everything we think we know as a scientific fact today, is subject to becoming either obsolete or completely overturned at some point in the future. Now, the issue here is not that any given fact is necessarily going to change or be superseded, but half of the body of facts in any given field will disappear within a certain amount of time. So, for example, the half-life of psychology has been determined to be 5 years. That's an amazingly short amount of time for half of the quote-unquote facts in the field to become obsolete or disproven and dropped altogether. So the half-life for other fields is going to be different, maybe shorter, longer. But the point is that facts as we understand them collectively at any given point in time, in any given field, are continually evolving and changing. And we need to recognize that this has always happened throughout history and nothing to indicate at this point that it's going to suddenly stop happening. Another of more than one reason, but one reason why we don't really know anything with certainty, and that science does not ultimately tell us the nature of reality, but rather provides for us a useful roadmap. And those who mistakenly think that science is about telling us the ultimate nature of reality just simply misunderstand what science is and does, and misunderstand the fact that science is continually evolving. Well, I've sort of gotten off topic here. Let me reel myself back in here. Here's a study that says parental obesity and risk of autism spectrum disorder. And the conclusions of this study, the cause of autism, folks, has nothing to do with vaccines or heavy metal exposure or anything else. It's all about obesity. If the parents are obese, there's a higher risk of autism in the children, so the study claims. I'm just really trying to scratch my head here. You know, what is the possible connection that they're trying to make here? They're trying to say that those people whose genetics predispose them to obesity also are going to pass on genetics that causes or predisposes children to autism. I mean, I'm really having a hard time making the connection there, and maybe I'll pass that on for the medical doctors to comment on further. Here's another article. I won't get started on the autism vaccine connection right now because that'll take us the entire rest of the show. But suffice it to say for the moment that there is a substantial body of evidence, including a number of peer-reviewed published medical studies, whatever that means anymore, showing correlations, strong correlations with vaccines and autism. One review of the autism literature by a former senior pharmaceutical researcher just flat out concluded that the encephalitis that follows vaccination is a cause of autism. So we have it out there in the literature. We've also found the CDC deliberately hiding information. This has now been documented. I say now, it's 3 years ago. Documented, the CDC has deliberately hid information showing and proving a vaccine-autism connection. I think that means the CDC is always lying about everything they say, but clearly they are willing and able to lie because we've caught them doing it. And so we have to be very suspicious of anything they say now that is supportive of pharmaceutical profits, because that would be one of the only reasons or primary reasons that they would lie about something like that in the first place. There's some control of the CDC and other government and non-government health agencies and entities by the pharmaceutical industry in order to perpetuate a fraud upon the world and the American people about vaccines, to promote a fast-growing multi-billion dollar industry that is making a lot of at least the top people in that industry quite wealthy. Anyway, here's a very recent article from USA Today. This is fascinating, an article that would reach the mainstream newspapers. Researchers raise questions about flu drugs. So the short of it here is that the Cochrane Collaboration, now this is an international consortium of medical researchers well regarded in the mainstream medical world, apparently, to get into USA Today, but they have done several reviews of the flu vaccine literature in recent years and always found that the credible research that's out there, which is not very much of it, or the data, even from studies that maybe erroneously concluded something favorable about flu vaccines, but they've done critical review. They're a nonprofit organization. They're not beholden to the pharmaceutical industry, so they have the ability to be objective, whereas many other researchers' published papers are not able to be objective. And in some cases, as has been found by the Cochrane Collaboration and others, deliberately deceptive in conclusions. But anyway, they have found that flu vaccines essentially have little or no effectiveness, but can injure and kill you. And that's a fact that you can go look up on the federal government's vaccine injury compensation page. It's on the web for anybody to go look at. It's paid out nearly $3 billion in the roughly 25 years that that program has been in operation, averaging approximately $100 million a year in payouts to people and families where someone has been severely injured or killed by a vaccine. $100 million a year. There's no trivial people when people are raising questions about vaccines. Not a trivial issue. And so the flu shots really don't work, but they can injure and kill you. You can go look up exactly how many payouts for injuries and deaths there have been for flu vaccines. And this is despite the fact that about three quarters of people who petition for compensation don't get any compensation. And frankly, I don't believe for a second that three quarters of the people who think there's a vaccine reaction, a vaccine injury or death, are just mistaken about that. The system has been manipulated in such a way as to make it extremely difficult for anyone to get, for most people who probably deserve compensation, to ever actually get any compensation. But that $100 million a year, the FDA and CDC, among others, in the past have said only 1 to 10% of the serious adverse events ever even get reported. So we really have no clue how dangerous vaccines are, what the true scope of vaccine injury and death is. It is just not documented in any significant way for us to know. So anybody who tells you there's a net benefit from vaccines, yeah, there's the occasional injury or death, but look at all the people who are being saved by vaccines. Folks, there's no data available to make that calculation. Anybody who tells you that is either ignorant or lying, and I don't necessarily mean that in an offensive way, but I'm just telling it straightforward like it is. There is no data available to make that calculation. Antiviral medications, Tamiflu and Relenza, are commonly used to prevent and treat influenza, but a new review is questioning their effectiveness, the review done by the Cochrane Collaboration. So in the case of Tamiflu, they say the drug does shorten symptoms of flu by about half a day. Well, that's a good reason to go out and spend, I don't know what it costs, but it's an expensive medication. You can save half a day of symptoms. Well, I guess if the symptoms are really bad and lasting for many days, you'll take whatever you can get, but it doesn't sound like a particularly impressive effect to me. But there's insufficient evidence, according to the Cochrane Collaboration, to support claims that it reduces hospital admissions or serious complications, such as confirmed pneumonia and bronchitis. So you can ignore all of that stuff, and if it's worth the expense to potentially get half a day knocked off your symptoms, then go for it. But make an informed decision. Don't believe the hype the drug companies are telling you. Now, Tamiflu increased the risk of nausea and vomiting in adults by around 4% and in children by around 5%. So is that half a day worth having an increase in your nausea and vomiting? 4 and 5%, not a huge amount, but, that's speaking for myself. Those are some of the least comfortable symptoms of common illnesses. One of the more humbling experiences in my life have been the times when I've had nausea and vomiting that was reflexive, something I didn't have any control over. It's just an awful feeling, and most of us have probably been there at one time or another. I'll take the extra half a day of symptoms and bypass the increase in nausea. Thank you. Now, Tamiflu use was also related to increased risk of headaches, psychiatric disturbances such as depression and confusion, and renal problems, that's kidney. I'll take the extra half a day of symptoms over those. Thank you. I'll go ahead and keep the flu symptoms for another half a day and not. I mean, actually, what I'm going to do is what I've been doing, taking lots of vitamin D daily, getting actual sun exposure whenever I can, reasonable amounts. I don't get the flu anymore. I haven't had the flu in years. Been taking vitamin D regularly, and vitamin D, there's research backing this up. It lowers the risk of flu. It's more effective at preventing the flu than vaccines, that's for sure, but there's research, making that specific conclusion, coming to that particular conclusion as well. So I'm not going to have any of this, but if you're going to get the flu, if I were to get the flu anyway for whatever reason, extra stress lowered my immune system or whatever, I'll take the extra half a day over these other side effects. Now, Relenza likewise reduced symptoms by about half a day, but it may be no better than other symptom relief medications, such as drinking clear liquids, gargling with warm salt water, using saline nasal drops, over-the-counter decongestants, pain relievers such as acetaminophen, ibuprofen. Of course, GlaxoSmithKline, the manufacturer, says we continue to believe the data from Relenza's clinical trial program. Well, if I had the kind of investment they have in developing this and the goal of continuing sales, I'd continue to believe my own hype as well. But you don't have to. They can believe their own hype if they want to. The question is, are you going to believe it? And I recommend going with the Cochrane Collaboration's evaluation on this. They don't have anything to gain by criticizing the pharmaceutical industry. Actually, they have a lot to lose because they are subject to being criticized, attacked, and so forth. So they wouldn't go out on a limb like that unless they, I don't believe they would anyway, unless they had some truth here to back up what they're saying. God bless the Cochrane Corporation. If they're atheists, may the universe bless them. Random fate or whatever, but what have you. See, now, the Tamiflu maker, which is Genentech, its division of Roche, also challenged the reviewer's conclusions, which, of course, we would expect. But in some cases, it says the reviewers failed to analyze appropriate statistical information, blah, 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 blah. Peter Doshi, the assistant professor of pharmaceutical health services research at the University of Maryland School of Pharmacy, and a co-author of the Cochrane Review, says the team focused on the 20 trials it did because it was more interested in the more rigorous, randomized, placebo-controlled research. Many of the other 77 other studies didn't meet that criteria, and this is critical. Anybody can write a study and get it published. Even the random computer program or a computer program that makes random studies can get studies published. The question is, what are the reliable studies? And Dr. Doshi says he's not interested in health scares. What we found are statistically significant increases. I don't know absolutely for certain with this, without a shadow of a doubt, that Tamiflu was responsible for these negative effects. But what he's seeing here are clear reason to be concerned and to look into it further. Now, that's about as generous as you can be. So anyway, not surprising for those of us already familiar with the poor integrity or lack of integrity record that the pharmaceutical industry has, but something worth knowing about and thinking about keeping our eyes on. Now, another article here that someone sent to me by email, that the minuscule risk reduction makes the $1 rotavirus vaccine uneconomical in India. So it may be that the new rotavirus vaccine that was described in the publication in The Lancet recently shows that serious rotavirus diarrhea is uncommon in India and the vaccine only effective against 50% of that. And long story short, they've come to the conclusion that it's just not a cost-effective vaccine to use in India. I think that's interesting. Because usually, every time a vaccine is recommended, everybody jumps all over it and it gets added on, regardless of what the quality of research supporting it may be. So, interesting point there. Let me see what else we've got going on here. Article just published today at easyhealthoptions.com, new effect of the whooping cough vaccine. Now, we've heard this before, but I'm always glad to hear when somebody addresses this again. Researchers in Australia this time made a disturbing discovery about changes that are occurring in the bacteria that cause whooping cough, and they think these dangerous adaptations by the disease, which may mean mutations, but in any case, they think it's in response to the vaccine. The Bordetella pertussis, which causes whooping cough, they found that many varieties no longer possess a particular surface protein called protactin. And by not having that protein on its surface, it can hide from the immune system more easily and infect more people. It's harder for the antibodies made by the body's immune system to find out, to search and destroy these bacteria. And this could mean that these particular new strains have gained a selective advantage over the other strains that do have this protein, the protactin protein. So they had an epidemic recently of whooping cough in Australia. Lasted from 2008 to 2012 and infected 142,000 people. 9 babies died of whooping cough. More studies are needed to better understand the effects of vaccination on the evolution of the organism. The acellular pertussis vaccine produces antibodies, which is the main cause of severe disease symptoms produced by the whooping cough bacterium. Produces antibodies against pertussis toxin, and it's the toxin that's the main cause of the disease. Of course, they finished by saying vaccination is still the only way to protect against whooping cough. Well, No, you can seek to maximize your nutritional health, and you will be resistant to many diseases. Or even the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention here in the U.S. tells us that not everybody who's exposed to a disease gets sick. Some who are exposed have mild forms of the illness, others less mild. Maybe there's some genetic predisposition involved there, but I tell you, given all that I've read on diet and nutrition and what's going on in this country and around the world, the Western world in particular, and increasingly even third world, diets are all, on the whole, pretty bad. And there's a huge connection between diet, nutrition, and health and susceptibility to illness and disease. We've got to take a break here. We'll be coming right back in a couple minutes. Got another half of the show to go. You're listening to Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. with vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips from Asheville, North Carolina. We've got to take a short break here, but please stick around and come back. If you'd like to call in to ask a question, make a comment, that number is area code 347-324-3704. That's area code 347-324-3704. And we welcome your calls. Stay with us. We'll be back in just a little bit.
Did you know most Americans know nothing or very little about the legal system? I am the Rose Colombo, longtime legal activist, legal coach, legal advocate, and the author of Fight Back Legal Abuse, Irwin Award winner, and also my latest political satire, Obamacare Dinosaurs, Rednecks, and Radicals, a political satire exposing the evil agendas of Obamacare and redistribution of wealth that leaves you with a thought-provoking ending. Will mankind survive, or will the U.S. natural-born citizen become extinct? It's available at Amazon.com. You can also visit my website at www.fightbacklegalabuse.com for more information. So order your copy today and empower yourself with knowledge before injustices come knocking on your back door unexpectedly.
Hi, I have a question for you. Are you sick and tired of being sick and tired? Do you want a company that provides good quality ingredients and does not use artificial sweeteners? Look no further. Genesis Pure has a complete lineup of health and wellness, sports performance, and superfruit juices like Noni and Mangosteen that are pure, wild harvested with no binders and fillers. The philosophy is simple. Cleanse the body of toxins, balance the body's pH and hormones, and build the body nutritionally. Every race has a starting line, and yours is Cleanse, Balance, Build. Sign up for at least a 25% discount and include auto ship of at least one product to start building up 20% back in points for free products. It's a win-win. Help fund our operation while you fund your body nutritionally. Start your journey at genesispure.com/freedomizerhealth. Again, that is genesispure.com/freedomizerhealth.
Your backyard is not a battlefield, but unfortunately, your government might consider that idea open to interpretation. Please join the movement now to help stop the NDAA. On the anniversary of the American Revolution, People Against NDAA, PANDA, will be kicking off its Take Back concert tour around America with a one-day fundraiser to kickstart the resistance. Over 30 artists and speakers will be coming together for a three-stop tour to bring awareness to the NDAA. And since the mainstream media has all but ignored the NDAA, we're getting the word out in a different way, through music. You can help support us by attending our Money Bomb event this April 19th, by visiting our website at takebacktour.com. Be the change. Be a part of the resistance. Be a part of history. See you April 19th, takebacktour.com.
Vaccines are required for students, employees, immigrants, military members, and international travel. Do you know how to legally avoid them? This is vaccine rights attorney and Freedomizer radio host Alan Phillips. My vaccine exemption ebook can help you avoid the mistakes that have cost others their exemption rights. Get the authoritative guide to vaccine legal exemptions, an ebook available at freedomizerradio.com and vaccinerights.com.
Let freedom ring throughout the land.
We're back. You're listening to Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. with vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips, coming to you live from the Vaccine Rights Studio in beautiful Asheville, North Carolina. Many of the articles, the news items that we talk about here on the show come from articles that are linked from the Pandemic Response Project's website. It's those three words spelled out, all run together, pandemicproject.com, pandemicresponseproject.com. And there's a news link at the upper right-hand side of every page on the site. Take you to the news page. My other site and the primary site is vaccinerights.com, vaccinerights.com. And there's a link to the Pandemic Response Project news page right there on the homepage of vaccinerights.com as well. We have time to get only to a small fraction of the vaccine news articles that are linked there. And the site, because it's my site and I'm coming from the perspective of an attorney and politics and underlying corruption and all of that, I try to focus primarily in terms of the articles that are linked. It's just a general rule, but primarily on those issues that have legal or political aspects or implications. There are other websites hosted by both medical and lay researchers that focus more on the medical aspects. I certainly include some of that. Well, don't want to just simply try to duplicate or compete what other people are posting. So I really focus. You want to learn, focus more on the politics and law, come to vaccinerights.com or pandemicresponseproject.com. Now, there's another article here I want to talk about. This one posted at foodsafetynews.com. Publishers platform, time to vaccinate restaurant workers against hepatitis A. Boy, this is a not at all surprise to me. Let's see, where to begin with this? So many parts and pieces. The Department of Health and Human Services, the federal department, because many states also have their own Department of Health and Human Services, federal Department of Health and Human Services has what they call their 2020 Healthy People, or is it Healthy People 2020 initiative, and many, many different health goals for the nation, which include vaccinating 90% of the healthcare workers in the country with the flu vaccine and vaccinating 90% of all U.S. employees and U.S. adults with the flu vaccine by 2020. They're well on the way to that, by the way, already here in 2014 with the nation's healthcare workers, because hospitals around the country are implementing flu vaccine mandates, get the flu shot or lose your job, while most are also implementing some kind of exemption policy. The vast majority of those exemption policies are unlawfully restrictive, overly restrictive, in violation of federal civil rights law. I say that from a perspective of experience. I recounted recently, I've worked with over 300 healthcare workers around the country in the last 3 years, and I would say 90 to 95% of my clients' hospitals had unlawful policies. And when we call the law to their attention, usually my clients will get an exemption, but many times they don't even change the policy. They just keep an unlawful policy on the books. Look, until somebody's going to sue them and it's going to cost them money, they're going to do whatever they want to. That's just the arrogance, the arrogant attitude of the rules are not for us, they're for everybody else, that doctors and hospital administrators often have. Now, this is not all of them. I have encountered at least, I don't know, maybe 0.5%, 1% of hospital administrators or their attorneys who were polite, cooperative, really did want to do the right thing. I've never had a hospital attorney try to make a plausible counter-legal argument to my letters to administrators where I explain the law and how it works and why their policies are unlawful. They don't disagree with me. They just don't make any changes. You know, following the law is just not a priority. meeting whatever goals that I'm sure in part are motivated by financial gains seems to have the higher priority. Now, there is a on-the-table financial game. There may be any number of under the table, but on the table, this has reportedly, I say reportedly because I've not been able to document this in codified law in statutes or regulations, but reportedly from several sources now that Medicaid and Medicare has been tied, the reimbursements that hospitals get from Medicaid and Medicare has been tied to the flu vaccination rates. So they've got to get 90%. So the story goes, 90% of their staff vaccinated, or they can start losing some percentage of the reimbursements. The only thing so far I've seen, and nobody's been able to point to a statute or regulation to show me otherwise, the only thing I've seen so far is a regulation that's a reporting requirement. They have to report what the immunization rates are, but not that, and they can lose reimbursements for failing to report, but not that they have to reach a 90% minimum. But that's what a lot of people are saying, so I don't know if that's just the way it's being treated or if there's a law that I haven't found and had time to look up and find, if it is there, and haven't found in the looking I've been able to do so far. But in any case, this is just the beginning, folks. The reason they're vaccinating healthcare workers with the flu shot is, first of all, the reason they're using the flu shot is that's the only vaccine you have to get every year. So that's going to be the most profitable vaccine, period. The reason they're vaccinating healthcare workers is because they want to use healthcare workers as a model for the rest of the country. If all your healthcare professionals are getting a flu shot, it must be the right thing to do, right? They're not going to mention that the reason most of them are vaccinated is because they'd lose their jobs if they didn't get vaccinated. We won't hear about that part in the mainstream news, but we will hear that, oh, look, all your healthcare workers are getting a flu shot. You should too. So that's why they're doing the flu shot. That's why they're vaccinating healthcare workers first. But there's an endless list of other vaccines to add to the list, and there have already been formal recommendations now, and some hospitals are already doing this, requiring their employees to get hepatitis B shots or the MMR or the Tdap or DTaP. So already other vaccines being added to the list here. But now they're going to start doing other categories. There are already bills in some of the state legislatures to require vaccines for child care workers, for teachers. These are sort of obvious next categories for the industry to go after. Anybody who has regular contact with children. After that, it'll be anybody with regular contact with the public generally. But in the meantime, and as we're seeing by the article that prompted this discussion, restaurant workers are going to have to be required to get hepatitis A vaccines. We're going to see this not just in the restaurant, but in the food service industry in general. We'll see hepatitis A vaccines required for anybody who's a farm worker, anybody who works in a restaurant, anybody who works in processing or packaging or shipping food. All these people we'll see being, I predict, but not because I have some magical power, because it's really obvious, to get hepatitis A vaccines, because there have been some alleged hepatitis A outbreaks from alleged mishandling or not, but through the production and processing and shipping and serving and cooking and so forth, food. So we're going to see this throughout the food industry, the food service industry. Now, I've already had that come up a couple of times in my practice, but I will tell you that the same law that protects or provides a legal out for healthcare workers can apply in any other industry. federal civil rights law that applies to employers with, I don't know if it's 15 or over 15 employees. If your employer has exactly 15 employees, give me a call and I'll look it up real quick for you. But whichever it is. So it's not going to apply to little mom and pop shops, but it will apply to any small or larger employer with 15 or more employees. So a good, heavy, hefty percentage of the adult working population, when you are required to get vaccines, federal civil rights law provides a potential out. Now, the out I'm talking about is what the law calls religious beliefs and practices, but a lot of people say, oh, well, I don't go to church, that cuts me out, or I'm not a Christian Scientist, or I'm a Catholic, or I'm a Buddhist, I can't do that. Listen, folks, it's not about what you or I think religion, it's about how does the law define religion, and there's a good news, bad news thing here. On the one hand, the way the law defines religion is as a starting place is so broad that there's even beliefs you could hold as an atheist that are protected religious beliefs, fall within the legal definition. So don't hear that word religious as only meaning somebody who's a Christian Scientist or Amish or Jehovah's Witness or something like that would be able to get a vaccine exemption at work, because it's much, much broader than that. Doesn't matter whether you go to any church at all, whether you're a member of any religious organization at all. And if you are a member of one, it doesn't matter which one it is. You can be Catholic, Baptist, Buddhist, Hindu, Islamic, whatever, if your interpretation. So the good news is literally anybody can potentially qualify for a vaccine religious exemption. The bad news is, if you want to think of it as that, it's not so much bad, it's just a tricky part. And this is an arena where you're going to have to, most of the time anyway, you're going to have to state what those beliefs are and explain that to your employer. And in my experience, the vast majority of people who do that on their own will fall into one or more of what I refer to as legal pitfalls. They will shoot themselves in the foot, not because they're any less intelligent than me or anyone else, but because of the way the law works. Most people's common sense approach to that process, writing what I call a statement of religious beliefs opposed to vaccines, will wander into one or more of these so-called legal pitfalls. The way the law works on this particular point as to what specific beliefs do and don't qualify, it's just not consistent with most people's common sense approach. So I recommend people consider working with an attorney if you see, encounter that. Your employer is requiring you to get any vaccines. And yes, I do work with people all over the country in that arena. So I'm a good first start for many people because I've got more experience on that particular point than other attorneys and charge a lot less if you can even find another one. Let me push on here, though. I don't mean to make this a self-serving commercial here, just telling you the truth as I understand it. But we're going to see this more and more unless and until we organize, those of us who want the right to make informed choices where vaccines are concerned. If we do not organize and become legislatively active, we're going to see more and more vaccines required for more and more people. And employment is an area where we can expect to see rapid change over the next few months to several years, because it's already been happening with hospitals in the last 2 or 3 years, in particular since the pandemic, generally so-called pandemic in 2009 and 10, but basically 2012, 13, 14, 2011, forward, fall of 2011 forward is when it's really been picking up, and it will continue to pick up with hospitals over the next few years as it spreads into other professions around the country. Don't believe your employer if they say there is no exemption. They may be correct with respect to no state law that spells out an exemption. The federal civil rights law is not a vaccine exemption law. It's a law that requires employers to accommodate their employees' religious beliefs and practices. So it can function as an exemption law. So if somebody tells you there is no exemption, strictly speaking, that may be true. It does not mean however, that there is no legal way to avoid the vaccine. So if you don't like what's going on at work and you don't like what you're hearing, find out from other credible sources what your real rights are and how to exercise them. Well, let me see what else we got here. I see the clock is just ticking away quickly as always. You know, from time to time I have people ask a question concerning one version or another. I hear this from parents around the country. They say, some kid in school got the chicken pox. My kid has a vaccine exemption. Now they're telling me my kid has to stay home for 3 weeks. Can they do that? Well, yes, they can. It's policy all over the country, as far as I know, that when there's an outbreak, the unvaccinated kids have to stay out of school for the incubation period of the disease. Chickenpox, the incubation period is considered to be 10 to 21 days, so they're going to err on the side of caution. They're going to call it 21. And your unvaccinated child is deemed to be a risk to him or herself and everyone else. Because let's face it, when your child's not vaccinated, that automatically makes every other kid's vaccines not work. The authorities, if you press them and if they're operating on some reasonable amount of knowledge and not just propagandized fear, they will admit and acknowledge that vaccines don't work in everyone. So there are some kids who are vaccinated who are still susceptible. And then there are those kids who, for medical reasons, can't get vaccines. And so all the rest of us have to get vaccinated to protect those kids. That's part of the rationale they'll give you. Does it make sense? No. Because they only make the unvaccinated kids stay home. And the CDC says 5 to 15% of vaccinated kids don't develop immunity. The vaccines don't work. Now, they imply that there's something wrong with the kids. The vaccines are fine. There's just something wrong with those kids that their vaccines didn't work, which is absurd as a starting place. But the point is, the national average exemption rate, as of a figure posted on the CDC website in 2013, is less than 2%. It's 1.8%. And yet 5 to 15% of vaccinated kids don't develop immunity. So there is somewhere, give or take, about five times more non-immune vaccinated kids than there are unvaccinated kids. And unvaccinated kids can get natural immunity, and according to the CDC, without even developing symptoms. So it really doesn't make any sense. The policy is unfair. And because of that, if the reason your kid's unvaccinated has to do with your religious beliefs, then that's violating your religious freedom. That's constitutionally unsound. I think there's a potential lawsuit there if somebody ever wanted to take that one up. It's discriminatory. They're not making the non-immune vaccinated kids stay home. They're only making the unvaccinated kids stay home. And we don't know if they're unvaccinated. That doesn't necessarily mean they're not immune. It just means they're unvaccinated. Vaccination status is not a reliable indicator of immune status. Under the mainstream views, see, the mainstream people contradict themselves. Under the mainstream views, vaccination is not about individuals. It's about groups. As long as most people are vaccinated, supposedly everybody is protected, whether their vaccine worked or not, whether they got vaccinated or not, whether they're any individual is immune or not. It's about groups. Well, we're out of time, folks. I'm going to close with the same song that we opened with here. It's a song that I wrote, recorded, and produced called Destiny Freedom. You've been listening to Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. I'm Vaccine Rights Attorney Alan Phillips in Asheville, North Carolina. We're here every Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern and 3 p.m. Pacific. Thank you all for listening. Please come back again next week. Call in with your questions or comments. Area code 347-324-3704 next time around. And folks, we'll see you next week. Take care.
Across this land, both near and far, throughout the human race, within each beating heart, there is a dream whose time has come for us to claim our birthright, each and every one. Evil hands have intervened, controlling from the shadows, think they can't be seen. But we have eyes, see in the dark, to cast a light upon the madness we embark. Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency, for we must be the masters of our destiny. Upon their face, sincerity, while underneath a self-agenda does proceed. But falsity perfumes the air, the stench screams louder than the finest debonair. They'll fill your place with GMOs, and soon your lineage will never cease to grow. Inject your blood with toxic waste. The world is all the fairer if you'll just die in haste. Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency, for we must be the masters of our destiny. Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency, for we must be the masters of our destiny. For we must be the masters of our destiny. For we must be the masters.